Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio this morning is State Senator Daniel Biss from Evanston. He's a Democratic candidate for governor. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me, though I'm not totally sure how to follow what just happened.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, it's horrifying. And I actually think your lead-in was ideal, that she's doing this to get attention, and maybe it's best for us not to give it to her. But it is pretty extraordinary that in the wake of the tragedy, those murders, and as we're watching so much powerful and inspiring and I think transformational activism, you also have some people who are just desperately using it to try to advance their own careers and elevate their own profiles. I think it's pretty sickening.
So what should we do about guns in schools?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The president talks about arming teachers, and I think we can easily dismiss that as a wacky idea. But even beyond that, you hear a lot of talk about more metal detectors and more security guards and
hardening
the schools. And to me, that idea is basically giving up. That idea is saying, hey, listen, we are stuck with school shootings as the new normal. It's time to accept it and do what we can to mitigate it. And I don't accept that fatalism. I think we cannot live in a world where it's supposed to be okay to just assume there's going to be a school shooting every 6 months or every year. Instead, we need to pass sensible gun safety legislation, of which there's some potential movement in Springfield even, but that itself would not alone be enough. And then, of course, we need to work much more comprehensively on funding of mental health services and universal access to mental health and counseling services across ages in and out of school.
I mean, one of the problems, obviously, is the flow of illegal guns
Yes.
from Indiana, namely, where the laws are less strict on
That's
who
right.
can get them. And that's beyond our control here.
That's right. I think a governor needs to do two things in addition to fight to pass strong laws in Illinois. One is to work with our federal delegation to change the landscape in Washington, D.C. We've got 18 members of the U.S. House and 2 members of the U.S. Senate. The governor should work closely with all 20 of those folks to begin to move Washington towards sane gun safety legislation. But the other thing the governor should do is work with governors of neighboring states. Illinois is, in many respects, the capital and should be the leader of the Midwest. And we should have a governor who sits down with governors of neighboring states and says, listen, I know that you may not be super excited about a particular gun safety measure, but we have to work together. We need give and take on a variety of issues. And in order for Illinois to have safe streets, in order for Illinois as a state to be able to cooperate with Indiana and Wisconsin on other economic issues, we need those states to cooperate with us on safety measures.
Some kind of leveraging?
That's right. Well, negotiating. Negotiating and understanding that Illinois and Wisconsin and Indiana are part of a region and we thrive together or we suffer together. And we should be communicating strategically on a number of different issues. We should be engaging in give and take. And one thing that we should be doing as pushing other states is around gun safety measures, because you're right, that border between Indiana and Illinois is not impermeable, and if we do things that are only focused on addressing sales in Illinois, that alone will not solve the problem.
We talked about this kind of youth progressive movement that we're seeing kind of stirring up out of Parkland, Florida, and in many respects, those are the kind of movement kids and olders that you're trying to appeal to in this campaign.
Well, let's start by not talking about me at all. What those young people are doing in Florida and around the country is amazing. It's amazing to have the strength of character to turn this kind of nightmare into positive action and to do it with such toughness and strategic sense. I mean, they're running circles around the grown-ups. Let's just be clear about it. They're running circles around those of us who have been in this fight for a long time, and thank God for that. And so I don't want to compare my campaign to that in a crass way, but I do want to say that on all of the tough issues where we have not made the kind of progress that the people of our country and the people of our state deserve, The solution is going to come from activism. The solution is going to come from movement behavior. The solution is going to come from ordinary people rising up, saying we're not going to accept what we've had before, and we're going to build a new politics, a new community, a new society to fix it. And that is what our campaign has been about. It's been about people coming together to reject a broken old politics, build a new kind of campaign so we can change what's possible and build a new state of Illinois.
I'm curious about the state of the Democratic Party as it exists today.
And of course, me both, my friend.
Well, and me both. And I know you make that as part of your stump speech about this race being about the future of the Democratic, the soul of the Democratic Party. But, I mean, we're seeing things here. Last night in California, the California Democratic Party did not endorse Dianne Feinstein for reelection as part of kind of a progressive movement there. And I'm wondering, are we at that point now where the Democratic Party as we know it is we don't know?
Well, on a national level, the Democratic Party came out of the 2016 election after pretty rotten 2014s and 2010s, kind of at what I hope is rock bottom, just in terms of numbers, in terms of number of Democrats in the House and the Senate, number of Democratic governors, number of Democratic majority state legislatures across the country. We were in a really rough spot. When you're in that spot, it's time to make big decisions about the future. It's time to pick a direction. It's time to pick a new direction, one that's more in line with what the people need. And here in Illinois, where Bruce Rauner's taken the state of Illinois apart for the last 3 years, the truth is that for the previous 30 years, things weren't so hot either. And for the 12 years before Bruce Rauner became governor, Democrats were in unified control of state government, and there was plenty that didn't get done then either. And so I think this is a moment for us to decide who we're going to be as Democrats. And right now in Illinois, when we've got Bruce Rauner, an inexperienced failed billionaire, as our governor, and Donald Trump, an inexperienced failed billionaire, as our president, Democrats get to decide, do we want to just say, okay, we're going to do what they've done that hasn't worked? Are we going to say, if you can't beat them, join them and pick our own inexperienced billionaire? Or will we instead pick a middle-class progressive who believes in movement politics and making fundamental change?
When Democrats had unified control of the state, why didn't more things get done?
I think we have a system in Illinois where the wealthy and connected have way too much power. We have a system in Illinois where things don't change very much very fast because there's a collection of people who benefit from things the way they are, even though most of us don't. And I think that that system has infected both parties in the state of Illinois. And it's time for us to remake the Democratic Party based upon a hunger of grassroots activists across Illinois for real progressive change.
We're speaking with Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss from Evanston. He is a Democratic candidate for governor. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined by Democratic candidate for governor and state senator from Evanston, Daniel Biss, here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Senator, give me your assessment right now as we start rolling into the March real going for it, March 20th. How do you assess where things are in this race?
Well, so there's 23 days left. We're really coming into the home stretch, and I feel incredibly excited about the momentum that we've built. It's not just that we're surging in the polls, though that's been wonderful to see, but it's the unbelievable growth in volunteer hours and small donors and activism across the state. It's these amazing endorsements from groups like Move On and Reclaim Chicago and the National Nurses United, Sierra Club, Our Revolution. We feel like things are moving really fast for us. My sense is there's still a lot of undecided voters, and I think what that means is they've seen that one of the options being presented to them is an inexperienced billionaire, and they're looking elsewhere, and with the kind of energy that we have right now in our campaign, they're moving our way. I'll tell you one quick story. Yesterday, my incredible running mate, Letisa Wallace, was doing a little coffee, a session with a couple dozen voters in someone's living room, and as she's there giving her speech, the doorbell rings. And one of our volunteers says, hey, I'm a volunteer for the Biss Wallace ticket. Who are you guys for? And, you know, I think they'd been pretty well convinced by then. But we just have an incredible and passionate crew of volunteers across the state. I think that's what's going to put us over the top.
there's been a lot of discussion in this campaign about the issue of our pension debt and pension funding, and you were a sponsor of a bill that was later ruled unconstitutional in an effort to try to alleviate some of these pension issues. And you've said it was a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you're getting attacked for having sponsored that. What's your response?
Well, let me start by just talking about my own position. I got to the legislature in 2011. It was a time of a tremendous financial crisis in the country and the world, and tremendous debt here in Illinois. And I was trying to struggle with the best way to address that, and eventually got sucked into a false choice that said that, hey, listen, Daniel, people said, you may want a progressive income tax, and you may want to tax the rich to fund these pension systems, but that's not going to be possible until we either make changes to pension benefits or else make cuts to social services and education. And I accepted that false choice too quickly and picked what I thought was the least bad of the bad options and moved forward. And the Supreme Court overturned that bill, and they were right to do it. We shouldn't just accept a false choice like that. If the right thing, as I believed then and believe now, is to tax the wealthy and fund our pension systems, then we should have been fighting to change what was politically possible, not just accepting what was politically politically possible at the time. And that's been a really important learning experience for me. And if you look at my voting record since then, it's been about trying to do what's right even when it's difficult, and sometimes taking lonely positions, knowing that if I stake out the right but lonely position, other people will eventually come to me. And I think we need a governor who's not going to accept when the people who are currently benefiting from a broken system say, hey, you may think that one thing is the right thing to do, but the votes aren't there, so you might as well do something else instead. That's my position. And I, like I said, I think we need a governor who's learned that lesson. What I find frustrating about the attacks is that they're coming from J.B. Pritzker, who is approaching this issue with the most overwhelming level of hypocrisy imaginable. Back at that time, when I was in the legislature doing my best to tackle these problems, he was doing just one thing. Just one thing. He was funding an organization that was trying to push for pension changes. He was funding an organization that was well to my right. He was funding an organization that was pushing to eliminate pensions altogether. He was funding an organization that was attacking me for not going far enough on pension changes. And so while I say, listen, I was in there trying to address this. I'll acknowledge I wasn't addressing it the right way. I'll tell you what I've learned from it and how I'm going to address it going forward. He refuses to accept responsibility for what he did. He ducks the question. He dodges the question. He doesn't say he's learned anything. He just tries to change the subject. And that difference between how I address this and how he addresses it, I think speaks to a fundamental difference in leadership style and, frankly, a difference in character.
Well, we still have this overhanging pension debt. What do we do?
Three things. Number one, we need to make sure that we always make actuarially responsible payments into the pension systems. Not sometimes, not when it's politically convenient, not when we're in a growing economy, but every single year, no matter what. That's number one. Number two, we need to make the changes to our tax system to make that affordable by taxing the rich, by changing the Constitution to allow for a progressive income tax, by taxing financial transactions at the Board of Trade, by closing the corrupt Bruce Rauner carried interest tax loophole that allows hedge fund and private equity fund managers to reclassify their income as though it were not income, and in so doing get almost a 20% tax cut. And then number three, we have to find constitutional fair ways to decrease the cost. For example, Illinois has 628 different pension systems, more than any state but one. If we were to consolidate many of those, we wouldn't touch anyone's benefit. We wouldn't be doing anything that anyone could characterize as unfair or unconstitutional. All we would be doing is making it hard for politically connected consultants and vendors to reach their hands into all these different pots of money and pull some out for themselves, and we'd also be saving money. So if we take these steps, make sure we make the payments every year, make the tax changes necessary to give a fair tax system that would make it affordable, and then find constitutional fair ways to decrease cost without harming workers, we will get through this.
I know the talk of doing a graduated income tax is pretty common among all of your candidates here in this contest, but we've seen in the past how difficult it is to try to advance that as a constitutional amendment. And even if it were to get on the ballot, it's pretty obvious what the opposition's going to be, because it's not going to have tax rates in it. And you could commit to whatever tax rate you know, whatever, but it's going to be a scare factor game about they're not going to tell you how high they're going to raise the tax on you. Well, can you trust them?
Well, I'll address that in a minute, but I first want to say that you're right. Experience has shown that it's hard to get that fair tax referendum on the ballot, and that's why it's so important that I be the nominee. You're right. All of a sudden in this campaign, all the candidates are saying they support a progressive income tax, and I'm glad they've come along to agree with my position, but that's something I've been fighting for since I first started running for state representative a decade ago in an affluent district, by the way. I used to knock on doors in Winnetka and tell people, hey, listen, we need a fair income tax that asks the wealthy to pay their share so we can stop overtaxing the middle class and the working poor. I have been working to build the coalitions needed to get that done. I know it's the top priority because that flat tax provision in the Constitution is the original sin in Illinois budgeting, and I'll be working on that as job number one. By contrast, these other guys now all of a sudden have figured out that it's in their political interest in this primary to say they're for it, but where were they when we were fighting to get it done in 2013 and 2014? J.B. Pritzker has spent $56 million of his own money on this campaign. Let me tell you, if he'd been willing to spend $56 million helping us pass a fair tax amendment in 2013, we wouldn't have this problem anymore. So listen, if we want someone who actually can be trusted to get it done, I am your guy. But to your question, you're right. I don't think we should just put an abstract, theoretical referendum on the ballot. I think we ought to give people a real choice. I think we ought to pass a law that says, here's what the tax rates should be if the Constitution were to be changed. Here's what the budget would look like if the Constitution were to be changed. Here's how our property tax system would get fixed if the Constitution were to be changed. And then when folks go to the polling place to vote on the referendum, they're not voting on a theory. They're saying, if we vote yes, we get this particular tax code and budget and government system. And if we vote no, we have to stick with the status quo. And I think in that environment, people will be eager to vote yes.
So pass a tax code that's conditional upon passage of a constitutional amendment.
Exactly right. And then you can have calculator apps online that will show people, hey, if I make this, here's what the change would be for me. And instead of then allowing scaremongers to say this is going to be a tax increase on the middle class, people will know, based on what's already in the law, no, wait, this is going to be good for the middle class, good for the working poor, because we'll finally be asking the wealthy to pay their share.
But you're still not at a point about where those rates might be.
You know, that's got to get worked out together with the other side of the ledger. I think it would be irresponsible to say, here's a specific tax code, a particular rate at a particular number, without then explaining in every detail what's on both sides of the ledger. You've got to work out a budget comprehensively so it's balanced, so it's sustainable, and all the different parties have to be at the table to make sure we get it right.
Senator Biss, people want to find out more about the campaign.
DanielBiss.com, or you can visit us on Facebook at Facebook.com/DanielBiss or Twitter.com/DanielBiss. We've got 23 days left in this fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. 23 days left to pick a middle-class progressive over an inexperienced billionaire. Join us in this effort to create an earthquake that will fix the Democratic Party.
Is that 12-hour Facebook Live posted in entirety on that Facebook page?
It's in several blocks, so you can, you know, just 3 hours at a time, Rick.
Okay. Just for those, you know, grab your popcorn and dial it up, right?
I cannot imagine a more interesting way to spend your Sunday.
That's Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss from Evanston, candidate for governor. Senator, thank you as always. Appreciate it very much.
It's great being here. Thank you, Rick.